This is The Guardian.
Regid Ahmed here, coming to you from Gadigal land. Today, as thousands of US soldiers arrive in the Middle East, Iran is accusing Donald Trump of plotting a ground assault while publicly asking for a ceasefire. We're bringing you an episode of our global news podcast, Today in Focus, where host Lucy Hoff and Jonathan Friedland from Politics Weekly America discuss what is fact and what is smoke and mirrors when it comes to the war on Iran.
This is becoming a war where it's a clash of American military power against Iranian economic power.
We're doing extremely well in that negotiation. But you never know with Iran because we negotiate with them and then we always have to blow them up.
You cannot predict what this man does. We've learned that. So it's equally possible that he will step up militarily, try and take Kharg Island, or is using that purely as leverage to get a kind of climb down.
There's yet more distorted reality from President Trump, who is threatening to obliterate Iran's infrastructure, whilst also claiming he's in talks with a new reasonable regime about ending the war. From The Guardian's Today in Focus, this is The Latest with me, Lucy Hoff. I'm joined by Jonathan Friedland, Guardian columnist and host of our sister podcast, Politics Weekly America. It's lovely to have you back with us, Johnny. Thanks for dialing in. So it's obviously been a very busy weekend after a very busy few weeks. There's a lot to get through in terms of updates on what's played out over the weekend. But let's start with these thousands of US military personnel who've arrived in the Middle East. What we want to talk about, what they will be deployed to do there, but also this reported suggestion that there are US preparations for a ground invasion. That is reported, we should say, not confirmed at this time.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard, obviously, to work out what is talk, what is smoke and mirrors, what are real plans. Yeah. And of course, some of the messaging is designed to have an impact on the other track, which is going on here, which is some parallel universe, perhaps, but parallel track of negotiations. So some of it is designed to act as pressure. On its own, right, the number of reported personnel in the low thousands would not be enough to invade the entire country of Iran. Remember just how big this place is. It's seven times the size of Britain. It's France, Spain, and Germany combined. It's 2.5 times the size of Texas. This is a huge terrain, 90 million people. That's just obviously not going to happen. Instead, I think there's focus on this potential mooted operation for Kharg Island, this distribution hub for Iranian oil.
Yes, which we'll come to. In terms of these talks, which you mentioned, Trump says the US and Iran have been meeting directly and indirectly, and that Iran's new leaders have been very reasonable. Iran's version of those conversations is very different. What can we understand about what's going on there in terms of these talks, negotiations?
I think there is clearly some kind of back channel. It does seem to be running through particularly Pakistan. It's offered itself as the key broker. Steve Witkoff, golfing buddy and real estate partner, colleague of the president, is acting as the main US envoy. It appears he has an opposite number in the Pakistani military that he's been talking to. There is also this sort of group effort by Turkey, Egypt, and some of the Gulf states to see if they can cohere a group of people who could perhaps, a consortium that could perhaps be a face-saving measure for both sides if, and it's a big if, both sides decide they want to climb down. It could be that they become sort of co-stewards of the Strait of Hormuz, allowing shipping to go through.
Yeah, but a lot of hurdles to get through to get to that point, one imagines, and not an easy process. Trump, in an interview with the Financial Times, says, I quote, "My favourite thing is to take the oil in Iran, and part of that would be an attempt to seize Kharg Island, which is this small island off the coast of Iran that is a major oil terminal." How plausible is that, and how would Iran likely respond to that?
It would be a huge escalation to seize and Kharg Island. First of all, just because of how important it is to the Iranians. This is becoming a war where it's a clash of American military power against Iranian economic power. So the United States has this huge arsenal. Iran has this chokehold on the world economy through the Strait of Hormuz. But for itself, Kargil, 90% of its own oil exports run through that hub. And therefore, right. The current hold it has, which is economic, especially because Donald Trump lifted or eased sanctions, so handing them billions of dollars in revenue because they suddenly are able to sell their own oil, he would be essentially cutting that off if he were to take Karg Island. I think most people think, look, if it was a matter of just that operation, the US military is very mighty, very skilled, they probably would take it. Then it becomes a question of how do you hold it against Iranian counter pressure. The Iranians would respond, yeah, partly militarily. They would obviously not they would not leave American personnel unhindered, but they would respond economically by hitting more and more of those energy sites, infrastructure in other Gulf neighbors. They would obviously try and hit Israel's energy infrastructure, and they would see if they could escalate the economic power they already have and make it that much greater, so they essentially grind the world economy to a halt.
Yeah, and we are already, of course, seeing the huge economic implications of what's been going on the global economy, on markets, on the oil market. In terms of Iran's military response, the Iranian-backed Houthis in Yemen have launched a barrage of strikes in Israel. There are fears of further disruption, therefore, to global supply chains, because the Houthis, we understand, have the military capacity to cause some damage in the Red Sea to shipping, which again would just compound the issues of supply of the global economy that we're already experiencing.
That's right, because already the Strait of Hormuz is massive, 20% of the world's oil goes through there. This would then be another choke point, because so much leaves that region out through that through the Red Sea and the Bab al-Mandab Strait. So suddenly we're going to be having to learn about two of these choke points. And the Houthis, if they choose to escalate from just hitting Israel, which is all they're doing at the moment, which is essentially a reminder to decision makers around the world, we're here, we still have firepower. If they can hit Israel, then they can also start hitting ships going through that strait. It's happened before. Yeah. The Americans bombed them last time it happened. It happened in the aftermath of October 7, 2023. There was eventually a deal broken in late 2025, which has broadly held. But this is a reminder from them. We could come in here, and then we don't have, Iran and its allies don't just have one strangle point, choke point. We have two. And that would, I think, send the oil price through the roof, and it would send shivers through the global economy. So this is escalating, it's widening, and of course it's going to lead to yet more anxiety.
Yeah, you get the sense, as you say, of these new flashpoints popping up all the time, these proxy wars surrounding this conflict, not least Israel continuing its military assault on southern Lebanon to weaken Hezbollah. Journalists tragically killed in southern Lebanon over the weekend, and an enormous pain being inflicted on Lebanese people.
Yeah, it's a million people are out of their homes, displaced. That amounts to about a fifth of the Lebanese population there. Israel talking about pushing right into southern Lebanon, perhaps up to the Litani River, and holding it as a buffer zone, essentially an invasion of that area. And doing it, by the way, in response to Hezbollah rocket fire on the north of Israel, which has sort of emptied out people displaced from their homes, in effect, there too. So this is spreading pain and misery across the region. In this case, there's not an economic ripple effect particularly around the world, but it's felt in the hardship of ordinary people and their lives as this war escalates. A reminder that Benjamin Netanyahu told Israeli voters, Israeli public, that he had obliterated the threat from Hezbollah in the previous 2 years, and suddenly they're back, they've got firepower. And same story with the Houthis. All over this region, there are those who were, people were led to believe had been beaten militarily, who are coming back and showing they still retain firepower.
And of course, Trump, who promised the end of endless wars and that the US would pull back from this type of getting involvement in conflict. Clearly, we've spoken about this before. We are so far from that. And I mean, we're all just hoping, aren't we, for some kind of off-ramp, some sense of clarity about whether these talks are legitimate, whether Trump is really looking to de-escalate, or whether he will go further with further military intervention. So what do you think, Johnny? What can we expect this week?
I mean, both scenarios are plausible. You cannot predict what this man does. We've learned that. Mm. So it's equally possible that he will step up militarily, try and take Karg Island, as we've discussed, or that he is using that purely as leverage to get a kind of climb down. It's very clear that I think the signalling is very clear that he would love this to be over, but it can't be a humiliating end. In a way, what he would love to do is turn the clock back to February the 27th of this year, where the Iranians are, you know, holding on to their arsenal, but they're allowing ships through the Strait of Hormuz. If he could get that deal, he would take it. In other words, exactly what he had before he started this whole adventure, he would take it. And so, but the question is, would the Iranians, is there anything that would persuade the Iranians to give up what is their Trump card, if you'll pardon the pun, which is this economic control? That's the thing Trump needs. He needs to have shipping going back through that strait, flow of traffic. That's the one thing the Iranians will not give up, because it's their one big card. So it's very, very hard to see how his minimum and their maximum meet at the moment, because they are far apart, I think.
Johnny, very, very far apart indeed. Thank you so much for your time and for your expertise.
Thank you, Lucy.
That's it for today. My huge thanks again to Jonathan Friedland. You can keep up with his columns over at theguardian.com, and do listen to his brilliant podcast, Politics Weekly America. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Latest, the new evening edition of Today in Focus. Today in Focus will be back in your feeds tomorrow morning as usual. The Latest will be back tomorrow night. This episode was presented by me, Lucy Hoff. It was produced by Bryony Moore. The senior producer was Ryan Ramgobin, and the lead producer was Zoe Hitch.
Chicago, 2011. A cop is murdered. Police and prosecutors swear they have the trigger man. He swears he didn't do it. How far will each side go to prove they're right?
Like, it's just one bombshell after another, you know, where you're like, what?
The story of a PlayStation, a brain-eating amoeba, and the relentless pursuit of justice. Off Duty, out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Guardian.